Welcome to another On the Hoof podcast for Vets in Practice. I'm Alison Braddock, Marketing and Business Development Manager for SRUC Veterinary Services. And today I'm joined by long-term contributor Colin Mason, who is Centre Manager of Dumfries and Veterinary Investigation Officer. Hello, Colin.
Hello there.
So what are we going to be talking about today, Colin?
So it's timely, I think, to discuss bovine respiratory disease. It's the second half of October, and we're heading into what traditionally we would expect is our sort of peak risk period for respiratory disease as the weather changes, as animals are housed, and as cattle are weaned, moved, marketed, and stressed in various different ways.
So what actually is bovine respiratory disease, or BRD? What causes it?
So BRD is your classic multifactorial farm animal disease, in that it sits very much at the interface between infectious agents, which we'll come on to in a minute, pathogens, that challenge the respiratory tract of cattle, management factors, what we do to them and how we manage them, how we feed them, and the different husbandry procedures, and the environment in which we keep them in, which relates to air quality, ventilation, not getting too cold, and stocking rates. So there's all sorts of different factors that contribute to whether an animal gets respiratory disease or not, and probably leading into the pathogen bit of it, I would almost set the scene by, you know, saying that bovine lungs and cattle are challenged by a whole range of respiratory pathogens fairly regularly. It's a little bit like sending your kids to nursery. There's all sorts of bugs that we're challenged with. Not every exposure to bugs leads to disease or problems. And you know, what we're really trying to do with any of these situations is maximize the resilience of these cattle to cope with whatever infectious disease challenges they might face.
Okay, thank you for that, Colin. So it would seem sensible to look at the individual pathogens responsible for BRD. So can you just explain about the pathogens?
Yeah, so we can really split them into three main categories. We've got viral pathogens, we've got bacterial pathogens, and we've got lungworm. And these are all there in different combinations in our cattle production systems. So if we start with viruses, the main three that we're interested in, or three to four that we're interested in, are RSV, respiratory syncytial virus, PI3, parainfluenza virus type 3. We've got bovine herpes virus 1, which causes IBR, and we've got bovine coronavirus. And I would say that the vast majority of these pathogens are present on most farms, with bovine herpes virus 1 being the only virus that, you know, we've got a proven track record of eradicating from certain units. So I would view most of these viral pathogens as, wherever we've got cattle, these bugs are present. We've then got the bacterial pathogens. So the main categories here are the Pasteurella species, Mannheimia hemolytica, Pasteurella multocita, Histophilus somni. We've also got Mycoplasma bovis and the Mycoplasma species. And we've got Salmonella dublin as a cause of respiratory disease as well. And these bacterial species, again, the vast majority of them are omnipresent in our cattle keeping systems. Certainly the Pasteurellaceae, the Pasteurella species are always present to potentially complicate the situations. Mycoplasma bovis is common, particularly in dairy systems and increasingly in some suckler systems. Salmonella dublin is a common finding in dairy systems. So we've got a range of bacterial pathogens, and then we've got lungworm. And particularly in the west of Scotland, but not exclusively so, across Scotland, lungworm potentially as a parasite risk, which we usually see in cattle at grass. Obviously, they have to graze, so we see it in cattle at grass in the late summer and the autumn. But it can certainly complicate respiratory disease in house cattle as well if we carry over a burden of lungworm into the housed animal, and those lungworm in the airways of the lung can cause damage as well.
What advice can you give to a vet coming onto a farm where they have dairy young stock?
Yeah, so we're now focusing on risk factors and the key risk factors to look out for. And I think it'll depend very much on the farm. It's very farm specific, but there are some things that I think are particularly important for dairy young stock and that might be slightly different, but not exclusively so compared to, let's say, store beef cattle. But with dairy systems, particularly if you go to early dairy life with dairy calves fed on milk, some of the big respiratory disease challenges are around temperature and environment. So cold stress and significant temperature fluctuations are a big part of the story. So to give you an example there, a newborn dairy calf or a dairy calf in its first few weeks of life, once the temperature dips below somewhere between 10 and 15 degrees, then those animals are cold stressed. And that is certainly in the north of England and Scotland, then in every day is below 15 degrees right now. So that's a significant impact. So that's cold stress, which basically means that they need to use some of their energy that they're being fed to keep warm, simply to keep warm. And that energy, therefore, is not available for growth. It is not available for disease resistance, fighting the immune, you know, making the immune system fight disease, all those sorts of things. And that can be a significant impact on calves. So keeping calves warm is really, really important, but with good air quality. So without going into all the detail on this, we need a draft-free environment at calf level that is warm, and then good air quality above that, that they're breathing with sufficient air changes in a set time. Really, really important. The other key one, which we can do less about, is temperature fluctuations, particularly at this time of year, where it can be very cold at night. You know, it could get down towards freezing at night or below freezing at night and actually be quite warm, you know, 10, 15 degrees during the day. And those changes in temperature are quite massive as well. So we need to conserve heat. So simple things like bedding, a lot of energy is lost through the floor. Ensuring that calves are reared in a dry environment because damp environments are cold. Adding in heat or conserving heat by using calf jackets for baby calves. Avoiding concrete walls or bringing animals in away from concrete walls or using plastic walls are really good at keeping them warm. Adding in heat is another really important measure, and the use of heat lamps, particularly in the first week and first month of life, really, really critical for avoiding these temperature fluctuations at nighttime and keeping calves warm. So there's lots of things to think about without even thinking about or considering which infectious disease it is that will help make these calves more resilient. Other key ones are feeding levels, making sure that we're feeding a sufficient amount of milk or feed to provide the energy that they need, and certainly in excess of a kilo of calf milk replacer a day is what's required, more in cold weather. And I would always say with any dairy heifer respiratory disease concern, it's always actually goes back to first principles, and even going, you know, definitely going back to colostrum management. So even if you've got a calf that's 6 months old with respiratory disease, is as well, you know, what was its immune status at the start, and have we got colostrum management right? So we need resilient animals to manage some of these challenges, and there's a lot that we can think about to help improve their resilience, particularly in the early stages of life.
Okay, thank you, Colin. So you've touched on things like temperature and nutrition for dairy young stock. What about focusing on store beef calves in relation to BRD?
Yeah, so these are quite different animals and come with different disease risks in terms of animal resilience. So obviously these are animals that are going to be housed for the first time at 6 to 9 months old, potentially housed with their mothers. So there is an age difference there, which can sometimes be relevant, and maybe weaned at the time of housing as well. And obviously the stress of weaning could be impactful. Other challenges would be marketing, transportation, mixing, all those stresses all feed into the picture for your weaned springborn suckle calf or store calf at this time of year. So a lot of thinking can go into this in terms of trying to either minimize these stresses or spread them out as much as possible. So you know, thinking about how you manage weaning, how you reduce the stress at weaning time, you know, when they're transported and when they're sold, and how you minimize the stress on arrival. There's an awful lot of things that can be thought about to minimize those risks. We'll maybe come back to vaccination at the end, but ensure that they're vaccinated and comprehensively wormed ahead of when they're moved into the shed. And also that any handling that we give them for any routine procedures is as stress-free as possible. So stress-free handling facilities and reducing the handling stress on some of these calves, really, really important. And we've got to bear in mind as well that these calves, up until the autumn time, have lived a fairly easy life outside with very little disturbance, in some cases not very much human contact, and then we're bringing them into an indoor situation where we handle them far more, we potentially stress them out far more, and we really, you know, change their world in terms of what they're used to, which can have an impact. So there's lots of things there. And the way I think about housing day for springborn suckle calves is really the only change that should happen on that particular day is that they're moved into a shed. The diet should be the same, as in we can introduce some of the house diet when they're outside at grass. We can hopefully shift away all of the other potential stresses, whether that's mixing, whether that is moving, whether that is disbudding, dehorning, castration, whatever it happens to be. We can move all those stresses to another time of their life so that the only stressor they experience on the day of housing is to move into a shed. Same group, same diet, just going from outside to inside. And that can be a massive benefit to the process. And you know, farmers can do a really good job of that and do a really good job of that. I think the other thing that we've got to think about is that the house environment into which we put these springborn suckle calves, and really thinking about stocking density. And this is something that I think we need to challenge ourselves a little bit with and think about, well, what is the stocking density for animals at certain weights? How many animals are we putting in? Are we overstocking them? And also the ventilation of these sheds and how we're managing those. And, you know, clearly there's a lot of information in that and a lot we could talk about, but a few key rules of thumb for me is that if we're housing an animal that's, let's say, 300 kilos, somewhere in that ballpark, then the total living area for that calf needs to be around about 4 meters squared in my head. So that's obviously the bedded area, the feeding area, the loafing area, but I'm thinking about 4 meters squared per animal at that sort of weight. The other things that we need to be thinking about is the simple facts of ventilation. As everybody, I think, probably knows, we're relying on the stack effect to ventilate these sheds, whereby we get fresh air coming in the sides of the building, meeting warm air generated by the animals that are in the shed, and then that hot air, stale air, and dirty air, if you like, rises and then escapes through a ridge in the roof. But we need to get the dimensions of that right. And my rough rules of thumb is that we need 0.1 meters squared of hole in the roof space, if you like, of vent exit space,
per animal in the shed. So 0.1 meter squared of roof space for an air exhaust per animal in the shed. And as far as inlets are concerned, we need 0.1 meters squared per animal in the shed on each side of the shed to allow for a decent air inlet. And there's a lot of detail in ventilation and systems and housing systems that we could talk about. But if we're wanting, you know, three very quick rules of thumb, it's looking at stocking rate, it's looking at air inlet, and it's looking at the air outlet and the space that we've allowed for that. And there are things that can be done perhaps to improve those in individual sheds, to improve air quality and reduce disease spread and risk.
There's some interesting points there about housing. So we wouldn't be SRUC Veterinary Services without discussing disease diagnosis and vaccination, would we, Colin?
Well, we wouldn't. And I kind of put this very deliberately towards the end of the podcast in that, as I said at the start, you could argue that most respiratory pathogens are present in most situations. And therefore, you know, perhaps knowing what bug is there, it might be relevant, and it certainly might be relevant to some situations, particularly if they're not using vaccine. But equally well, we can probably achieve as much, if not more, by managing the environment, managing stressors, managing feeding, to try and ensure that these animals are resilient as possible. But there will definitely be situations where it's useful to know the main bugs that are causing respiratory disease and then designing vaccination protocols round about them. And obviously that is a key part of any respiratory disease control program plan, is ensuring that animals are appropriately vaccinated. And as I said before, vaccinated ahead of housing so that we can manage that as best as possible so that they're immune before they're housed. So without doubt, we need to consider bespoke vaccination protocols for each farm to consider the main risky viruses and bacteria. And if we need to know, if we get respiratory disease outbreaks that we're dealing with, which we will do, and we need to know what bugs are involved, it's quite a simple process. And the main recommendation I would give is to collect intranasal swabs, deep guarded intranasal swabs, from animals that are clinically affected in the early stages of disease. So they're running a temperature, they've got a serous clear nasal discharge at the very most, and they're showing clear signs of respiratory disease. Those are the animals we need to sample. And if we sample three of those animals in the early stages of disease with a deep nasopharyngeal swab, we pop that swab into virus transport medium for transport to the laboratory. And then that swab is tested using the extended respiratory multiplex PCR. And then that's a fantastic test that will pick up all of the main respiratory pathogens that we would expect to be there. And therefore you can get clear results as to what the main causes are. Equally well, if you get negative results, if you sample the right animals, you can have good confidence in your negative results. So a really useful test in live animals to assess what is going on, and then you can use that information that's generated from that to plan future control plans around vaccination and see what's going on. So diagnostics do play their part. We need to put that into context. And I think as vets, we need to be thinking about, well, where are the biggest wins for these farms? Is it going to be looking at the environment and managing the environment and management factors? Because we all know that vaccines will not work as well if they're not used in animals that are in a good environment. Vaccines have a part to play, but they need to be fitted into the context of the whole thing. One final thing to say is there's another useful thing to do by way of health planning, maybe not in the acute phases of a pneumonia outbreak, but if there is a herd where we know we've had problems over the winter, they've had an increased level of respiratory disease in cattle of whatever class, their antibiotic use has been higher, and we're not sure how to guide future respiratory disease control plans and future vaccination plans, would be to blood sample some calves that have been affected at least a month after the event. So this is quite often a job for the new year, before turnout, certainly, if cattle are going to be turned out, and collecting blood samples from six animals that we know have experienced respiratory disease that previous season in recent months, and then looking for antibody levels to the different pathogens. And that's a great way of seeing what these animals have been exposed to, and from there you can then decide which animals you want to vaccinate, how you want to change that vaccination protocol going forward.
Thanks, Colin. That's given us a quick recap on BRD. Are there any further tips that you can give us for the farm vet?
I think that covers the majority of it. A lot of this is obviously around planning and planning strategy for what you do going forwards. And sometimes when you're in the sort of eye of the storm with a respiratory disease outbreak, then, you know, that isn't the time necessarily to be focusing on long-term prevention strategies or building changes. But, you know, one of the key things is to make sure that we come back to those farms and review them, and come back to them in peacetime, if you like, you know, in the summer months, long before the winter period, and come back to how we're going to plan the next respiratory disease season and risk period. So actually a lot of pneumonia planning really needs to happen in May, June and July. And perhaps that's really when we should be doing these podcasts, is talking about it then rather than talking about it now when we're expecting to see most of a problem. I think the other thing perhaps to challenge ourselves with is the level of respiratory disease that we see in some livestock systems. And always good to challenge, is this normal? Could it be better? And one thing I would always come back to, and it's some work that has been done in the States, and admittedly it's been done in young dairy calves, but they've looked at the clinical signs in dairy bred calves, and particularly animals that are coughing. And then with the technique of lung ultrasound, they've been able to look at what's going on in the calf's lungs in real time and be able to see lung damage if it's present. And it really came back with what I think is quite a sobering stat, which is that if you have an animal that is coughing, and at least consistently coughing, repeatedly coughing, then it will have lung damage. And the stat is also, is for every animal you see coughing, there will probably be another 2 to 3 animals in the same group that have lung damage. And I think that's quite sobering. And therefore, you know, I think for us as vets and farmers as well, it's coming back to, right, well, when you walk into a shed, how much coughing do you hear? Is that normal? And could that be better? Bearing in mind that a coughing animal pretty much will have some degree of lung damage. And that lung damage, you know, may not be massively clinically impactful, but it is going to have an effect on the animal's performance. It's going to have an effect on that animal's growth rate and its carbon footprint and all the rest of it. So, you know, it's pushing a bit harder to try and manage these things is going to be really important.
Thanks, Colin. I mean, what you've just said highlights the importance of proactive health planning, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So we hope we've covered, you know, the basics, or given vets an overview. And thank you for sharing that with us, Colin.
Thank you.